This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Two guests today. Sven Sundgaard joins us in his usual 5:35 spot. We'll talk weather with him. Little concerned about what this June heat is going to lead to. We'll talk to him about that. Also, one of our favorite senators, Senator John Marty, Senate District 66. He's going to join us today. We're going to ask him, would you go to Alaska during the special session? We'll find out what he has to say. My guess would be no. Patrick is here. Hi, Patrick. How are you?
Good. I thought it was going to rain, and it just kind of saying it spit was generous.
Yeah, it was. It was a mild dampness at best so far. Now, it doesn't sound like it's going to be the same. It sounds like south of us they're going to get some storms. We'll have to take a look at that a little bit later on. We'll talk to Sven about that a little bit later on. Do you know who Frank Bonner is?
It sounds familiar, but I can't say who he is.
One of the greatest characters ever developed for television. Hands down. Sales manager Herb Tarlick from the WKRP in Cincinnati show. I have often said that whoever wrote WKRP in Cincinnati, which I enjoy the show, it's a little bit dated now. It's a lot bit dated, especially in some of the shows. When they released the version, I don't know if you the story here, but WKRP in Cincinnati, of course, had a lot of great music on the show. But when it came to the DVD release and stuff, most of the music, they were prevented from being able to include that on these original releases, like the VHS release when they first did that, that you could not release the music was on it. So they just had generic music and the show didn't sound right. A few years ago, they negotiated with the music companies. They got, I think it was 93% of the music that was featured in the show was put back into the show. And it actually adds a lot to that show because, I mean, it was kind of in that post-disco, you know, rock was coming back sort of thing. I think 1979 was the first year that – was that the first year of the show? They kind of go through – I remember they talked about that Reagan becoming president and stuff like that. They're, it's kind of in that stretch. There are a lot of great characters. Whoever wrote that show – wrote a show from the point of radio. And I have, and I am not joking, I have worked with basically everyone at that station at some point. Bailey, Jennifer, Venus, Johnny Fever, Andy Travis, Les Nessman. Holy God, the news guys. They got the news guys, Les Nessman, pretty good. But no one. Frank Bonner was Herb Tarlick, the sales manager. He wore these polyester white, big white belt suits, had some classic episodes that were you know, the show, like I said, it is dated, but there are points where it shows that it was trying to understand things and kind of push some things forward. It wasn't great at it, but Herb Tarlick was just an iconic character on television. Frank Bonner has passed away, 79 years old. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, only the second member of that cast had passed away. Gordon Jump, of course, who most people actually probably remember as the Maytag repairman in those commercials. He passed away a few years ago as well. I think everyone else is still alive from the show. Were you ever a fan of WKRP in Cincinnati?
I actually saw some recently. My mom was watching through it.
I highly recommend it. It's a good show. There are some bad episodes. There was a bad episodes of a lot of TV back then. I'm going to be very honest. Somewhat inappropriate. Some of the episodes, of course, Turkey's Away is one of the great ones. You know, that's from the Thanksgiving. As a matter of fact, probably that episode alone caused that show to kind of explode as far as popularity goes. And still today, you know, 40 plus years later, that episode is one of the more iconic Thanksgiving episodes or movies you will see any Thanksgiving. So Kind of a little frustrating. But moving, shifting slightly from one of the whitest characters in the history of entertainment to some very good news. And I am very glad to see this, as federal workers will get Friday off to observe Juneteenth after President Joe Biden signs the new law on Thursday. The Office of Personnel Management confirmed on Twitter the law will take effect immediately, establishing June 19th as a federal holiday. And once again, I believe that is tomorrow. So tomorrow is a federal holiday. So federal buildings will, I'm going to guess, mail's not going to be delivered tomorrow. And federal buildings will be closed down. So good. And this is our first national holiday since Martin Luther King Day was enacted. Today, POTUS will sign the Juneteenth National Independence Day Act, establishing June 19th as a federal holiday. As June 19th falls on a Saturday. Oh, no, today's the 17th. So they'll fall on Saturday. Most federal employees will observe the holiday tomorrow, June 18th, the agency tweeted. Juneteenth celebrates the emancipation of African Americans who had been enslaved in the United States. It commemorates the day of June 19th, 1865, when Union Army General Gordon Granger arrived in Galveston, Texas, and proclaimed freedom from slavery. Now, that is, as once again, we are dealing with a world where people just do not want to talk about the real history of what actually happened. It is important to understand something about Juneteenth. Is that the Civil War was long over at this point. The Emancipation Proclamation had already been passed years earlier, and Texas was long out of the Civil War. But I know people are going to be stunned by this, slave owners were dishonest. I know. As a matter of fact, I was reading a little bit more about what had happened, and if you don't remember how what happened in the Civil War, basically when they started... When Grant took Vicksburg, they cut off the Mississippi. Basically, they got rid of Texas. They got rid of Louisiana, Arkansas. Then they, Sherman cracked Georgia over his knee. That took out the rest of the Southeast. And then basically it was a march from Sherman north through South Carolina to North Carolina. Lee was tied up in Virginia, and eventually the pincher move happened, and they eventually got him. So that's how it happened. So the Western states that were part of the treasonous bastards of the South, they were out of the war. But funny story, they had decided not to tell their slaves that they were free. And as a matter of fact, kept them for a lot longer than they should have. And this Gordon Granger arrived in Galveston on June 19th and made the announcement, which was the case. And I'm relieved this is the official announcement. The people of Texas are informed that in accordance with the proclamation from the executive of the United States, all slaves are free. This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves, and that the connection heretofore existing between them becomes that between employer and hired labor. The freedmen are advised to remain quietly at their present homes and work for wages. They are informed that they will not be allowed to collect a military post, and that they will not be supported in idleness either there or elsewhere. So basically saying, hey, you're not slaves anymore, but bad news, you still got to work for the people that kept you as slaves and hope that they pay you. Reading a little bit more on this, when Major General Gordon Granger issued the above order, he had no idea in establishing the Union Army's authority over the people of Texas, he was also establishing the basis of the holiday Juneteenth, June plus 19th, today the most popular annual celebration of emancipation from slavery in the United States. After all, by the time Granger assumed command of the Department of Texas, the Confederate capital of Richmond had fallen. The executive whom he referred, President Lincoln, was dead, and the 13th Amendment abolishing slavery was well on its way to ratification. But Granger wasn't just a few months late. The Emancipation Proclamation itself, ending slavery in the Confederacy, at least on paper, had taken effect 2.5 years earlier. And in the interim, close to 200,000 black men had enlisted in the fight. So formalities aside, but it should have been over. When Texas fell and Granger dispatched his now famous order number 3, it wasn't exactly instant magic for most of the Lone Star State's 250,000 slaves. On plantations, masters had to decide when, or slave owners, I don't know why they listed it as something, slave owners had to decide when and how to announce the news or wait for a government agent to arrive, and it was not uncommon for them to delay until after the harvest. So I want to make sure we understand this. The slave owners, who once again you know, revisionist history white people want to say, well, they were honest and dignified and they treated these people right. Bull crud. Blah, 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 blah. Nope, 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 they didn't. They knew the slaves had been freed. They knew they had to release them. They knew they had to let them go. And they didn't tell them until they were forced to. Did I forget to tell them that? Oopsie. Well, thank gosh we managed to get the crops out of the ground and kept slaves way past the time. This wasn't, they did this purposely, with intent. They kept people in human bondage for convenience, even though they knew they had lost. Don't tell me about the dignity and pride of the white South. Greedy bastards that basically just didn't want to admit they lost and basically kept people as slaves far longer than they should have. Even in the city of Galveston, the ex-Confederate mayor flouted the army by forcing the freed people back to work. As historian Elizabeth Hayes Turner details in her comprehensive essay, Juneteenth, Emancipation and Memory in Lone Star Past, Memory and History of Texas. Now, I'm going to read this, some of this from this. Those who acted on the news did so at their peril. As quoted in Litwack's book, former slave Susan Merritt recalled, you could see a lot of the black people hanging to trees in Sabine Bottom right after freedom because they caught them swimming across Sabine River, and they'd shoot them. In extreme case, according to Hayes Turner, a former slave named Katie Darling continued working for her mistress another 6 years, and she whipped me after the war just like she did before me, Darling said. Oh, that can't be true from white America, can it? White America, oh, no, 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 no. White America, the revisionist history people, the people that don't want the truth being told, no, it's like Gone with the Wind. It can't possibly be true, can it? No, it was. They treated them horribly and murdered a lot of them. Think about that. These bitter, broken, racist scumbags were so angry about losing their slaves, they murdered them, as opposed to allow them to go free. Don't tell me about the benevolence of white South after the Confederacy fell. These people made their money and their lifestyle off of holding people in as slaves. They starved them. They killed them. They beat them. They worked them to death. They worked them in the most atrocious of conditions. They weren't nice to them. Thank God we are recognizing this moment. Thank God we are recognizing what exactly did happen. When you realize the real scourge, the real history of what slavery was, People being forced to serve the white South opulent meals of food while being given sawdust to make food out of for themselves and their children. This is a holiday for us to have. It's a holiday for you, especially the ignorant white people that do not want to understand that slavery was as horrible it was, to freaking educate yourself a little bit. Not by giving you propaganda, by reading a damn book and actually looking at the history, as opposed to the made-up fake history in your mind. Julie is in Minneapolis. Let's take her call before we get into the break, because I got Senator Marty going to be coming in hopefully at any point. Go ahead, Julie.
Sure. Yeah, thanks so much for giving me and others some extra education about this needed holiday. You know, I'm glad the holiday's happening. It should have happened a long, long time ago.
Amen.
I know I heard that the Republicans are going along with it, but the problem is they don't want black people to vote. So how much of it, how important is it to them? Thank you.
It's not. And a reminder, it's dog and pony show for the Republicans, isn't it? It always is. Yeah, we want to celebrate Juneteenth. But by the way, if you try to give anyone food while they're waiting in an exorbitantly long voting line, we're going to arrest you and charge you with a felony crime. They're just horrible people, aren't they? They're just horrible people. Don't educate yourself. There is an element here we can learn from. That the reality is that no, this fake narrative that was put forward about what the White South was never existed. They were always in it for themselves. And frankly, and I'm going to be blunt, outside of a handful of cases, most of the time the white people were being nice to African Americans after the Civil War was because they were afraid they'd actually have to face the facts of what they had done. Not because they felt any remorse for it. The fact that the white South tried for another 100 years to stop even basic rights from being exhibited in the South and still today are trying to stop voting and stuff. We have a lot we have yet to learn. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Senator John Marty, hopefully coming up here before too much longer. I'm also going to get a little bit into, once again, vacation time in Alaska. We'll talk about that in just a moment. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, isn't that McNeil Show? I've actually read other places, too, especially in kind of remote parts of the South that troops never really got into, that it was even in some places into 1866, a year after the war, before finally federal troops got onto some of these plantations and some of these places and said, oh, by the way, these people are free. That was and the resentment and the anger that the whites had, how dare you come down and tell them the truth? And seriously, but these people, they want to believe a narrative that is wildly just, it's fraudulent. It's just made up. It is just made up. 952-946-6205. Once again, we are dealing with, it's a legislative special session right now. There are meetings that are going on. Senator John Marty is going to join us at some point this hour when he can get off the floor and chat with us. As soon as we get him, we'll get him on the air. But one of the things I do want to talk to him about is, once again, the brazenness of Senator Bill Ingebrigtsen. Now, I want to remind everyone here, this is the clown car that's in charge of the Senate Environmental Committee. Earlier this year, the courts ruled that the Environmental Protection Agency had the jurisdiction over clean cars in Minnesota. And all clean cars is basically e-cars, electric cars, non-fossil fuel operating cars per se, where it's not running on gasoline or diesel. And that this is an option we're going to offer clean cars in Minnesota so that the consumer, the individual, can make the choice of what kind of car they want to buy. And Republicans in the pocket of big oil have frantically been trying to figure out a way to stop this. I mean, they were making up lies. I mean, they were making up lies. It was Tomasini, the trader up from the Iron Range. Tomasini was making the argument that there are car dealers in Hibbing that have all these great cars. No one wants them. And no one could find the cars he was talking about. He just made it up because they're bankrupt. I mean, this is basically about stopping consumers from having a choice. And the funny thing is, everywhere consumers do have this choice about clean cars sell great. They sell fantastic. So Bill Ingebrigtsen, to basically try to derail this, has said that unless the House Democrats are willing to kill the clean car rules, which are supposed to kick in 2 years, which, once again, the Environmental Committee of the House and the Senate don't have any rules over. This is the Environmental Protection Agency that does this. That he is going to basically torpedo the environmental bill. The parks will close. Ha, 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 ha. Frankly, I'm still a little concerned. There are just too many bleeding heart freaking Democrats in the House sometimes that, we gotta save the state from them. Shut up. No, don't. No, don't. Don't. You will not get any credit. He'll look to his constituents look like he's a strong leader that got you that forced your hand. You'll out there saying, we saved you, and his supporters won't care. And a lot of the people that support you will be mad at you because you caved on clean cars. Do not cave on this. If they are stupid enough to hold the gun to their own head, is it the Democrats' job to try to save them? And trust me, considering most of the state parks are in Republican districts, if they shut them down on July 1st, I'm going to guess by 4 or 5 o'clock that afternoon on July 1st, a very large white man is going to be screaming, running down the hall saying, I've dropped the clean car rules. Let's pass the environmental bill now. That's going to be my guess. Do not save them from themselves. Bluestem Prairie has a little bit of a story here. The Grand Rapids Herald Review under the headline, Large Coalition Calls on Senate Republicans to Stop Threatening Closure of State Parks. With a key senator leaving Minnesota without completing his legislative work, a large coalition of organizations is calling on Senate leaders to drop their threat of closing state parks by July 1st. On May 4th, Bill Ingebrigtsen, jackass, the lead environmental negotiator for Senate Republicans, confirmed publicly that he would hold up passing the environmental budget if the state continues to pursue giving Minnesota consumers more electric vehicle options through clean cars rulemaking. The Senate maintained this position even as the regular session ended and refused to engage in further negotiations in the environmental bill, risking closure of the Minnesota State Parks on July 1st, as well as funding for several state institutions. While Minnesotans are not able to count on their state parks being open for their vacations this summer, the very person who put those plans into jeopardy, Senator Ingebrigtsen, jackass, recently flew to Alaska for a beautiful fishing trip. Oh, you know, you want to play a little of the Alaska music? Play a little later. Beautiful Alaska. It's time for your Alaskan fishing update from AM 950. Today, we join the human glacier himself, Bill Ingebrigtsen. White as, oh, I mean white. Holy God, white. Sweet Jesus, is it marble? It's Bill Ingebrigtsen. As he flees the magical waters of Minnesota, the fine fishing of our state, for Alaska. Bill Ingebrigtsen, a man who, rumors say, likes his s'mores with only marshmallow. Why? Because, rumor has it, he doesn't like the white parts mixing with the brown and black ones. Rumor has it. Bill Ingebrigtsen, white s'more guy. Let's find out exactly how things are going with the Alaskan fishing update with Bill Ingebrigtsen.
Still looking for more whitefish.
There it is, Bill Ingebrigtsen, senator, not doing his job. Absolute incompetent boob who, on the first day of special session on the bill that moron is holding up, heads to Alaska. Beautiful. There you go. Here's your Alaska fishing update. Rumor has it on the s'mores. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm just, Patrick, it sounds right. And let's be honest, it's on brand. I mean, I don't want to get down that road. But just, I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, they were kind of, you know, they'd have those, you know, s'more parties out by the chain of lakes. And they'd find a lot of leftover chocolate that he wasn't using.
I don't know. Rumor has it. We don't know.
We don't know. We're trying to find out.
Does anyone have a picture of Senator Bill Ingebrigtsen eating a s'more? Okay. Until I see proof, I'm just going to go with the whites-only s'more. I mean, until I see proof, do we have a picture of him? Do I really want a picture of Bill Ingebrigtsen eating a big thing of marshmallows? No. Don't want to do that. Anyway, let me get back to this editorial here really quick. Steve Morse, executive director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. Many Minnesotans don't have the money to live or on a lake or fly to Alaska to go fishing. Many Minnesotans rely on closer options for recreation like visiting state parks, the Minnesota Zoo, the Science Museum, and more. And those more accessible options are threatened by Senator Ingebrigtsen's inaction. State leaders are going on vacation while continuing to threaten our ability to vacation ourselves. They need to do their job and drop their threat now. While Majority Leader Paul Gazelka claims to want to avoid a shutdown, he continues to support Senate Republican Environmental Chair Bill Ingebrigtsen, moron, who maintains his demand that state parks close if clean car rulemaking continues. Whether Senator Gazelka threatens to close state parks himself or has Senator Ingebrigtsen threaten state parks on behalf of their caucus, the threat remains, said Morse. Senate Republicans push towards a shutdown of state parks if they don't get their way on clean carts. The impact on Minnesotans is the same. We can make plans to visit our state treasures just when we need them most. That's outrageous. Climate change is real, and many Minnesotans have said they would like more choices when it comes to considering a purchase of an electric vehicle. Once again, this is about your choice. This is about Bill Ingebrigtsen not wanting you to be able to even choose to have a clean car. That's what's going on. This is not about, oh, well, this is overstep. No, he doesn't even want you to have the choice. For Senate Republicans, Environmental Chair Bill Ingebrigtsen to walk away from negotiations as they head to Alaska to go fishing on vacation while threatening to close Minnesota state parks is irresponsible, said Pig Furshlong, Director of Outdoor Programs at CURE in Montevideo. So far, the DFL doesn't seem to be too concerned about this, even though, once again, if the DFL ran with this, they could have shut down this environmental debate the first day Alaska boy flew out of here. But apparently they don't think that that's too much of a big deal. So anyway, there you go. The Alaska fishing update and the update here. Hopefully John Marty will join us. Senator John Marty will join us before too long. More as well. Once again, Sven Skungard coming up as well in the 5 o'clock hour, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Give you the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I did want to actually take a quick moment as well. He's not the only Republican that's getting a lot of grief here. And I do want to read this. There's an editorial. Let's see, where is this? Pardon me, I shuffle through my briefs. I believe this was one of the newspapers, New Ulm, to the editor. It could come to no surprise to anyone with an open mind and an eye on politics that Representative Mary Franson panders to the hyper-partisan fear-mongering. Her social media accounts often draw conspiracy-laden vitriol, littered with debunked theories and links to propaganda devoid of much factual substance. For the last year and a half, Franson has made every effort to downplay COVID-19 and its impact on the nation. She expressed no sympathy for the 600,000 people, the preventable deaths, rather, I should say. She's challenged scientifically backed studies to mitigate, and she's favored businesses over whom they employ in the name of freedom. She doesn't even know how the vaccine was free of charge as recently as the end of May, as she stated in a since-deleted tweet. Now, I want to repeat that because what? Apparently, she was not even aware the vaccine, which is free, was free as recently as the end of May. And of course, in pure cowardness, I'm going to delete my tweet instead of looking stupid. Well, too late, Mary. Just FYI. The same employees, once touted by conservatives as essential and even heroes, are now being demonized as grifters for not rushing back to jobs paying poverty wages. As a woman who rose to national notoriety for comparing people on assistance to animals in the zoo we shouldn't feed, this shows a complete disregard of low and minimum income working class residents that comprise the majority of her district. Which it does. She doesn't care about those people. She does not care about those people. This isn't about right or left. It's about taking care of your most vulnerable in the wake of a worldwide and ongoing pandemic. It's appealing enough to have representatives that believe public health experts are manipulative political operatives, but to regard those most disenfranchised by the pandemic as just taking advantage is nothing short of heartless. 8B deserves better than Mary Franson. Agreed. Should come as no surprise to anyone with an open mind and an eye on politics that Representative Franson panders to the hyper-partisan fear-mongering. Her social media accounts often draw conspiracy-laden vitriol littered with debunked theories and links to propaganda devoid of much factual substance. For the last year and a half, Franson has made every effort to downplay COVID-19 and its impact on our nation. She expressed no that's the part that's there. We've already read that part. So basically, there you go. She doesn't even know the vaccine is free. She basically is, she doesn't know it's free. All she does is vilify most of the people in her own district. You know, the problem here, and this is an important thing, yet she keeps getting elected. Why? Why does AP keep electing this clown who doesn't even, we talked about Tory Westrum yesterday. He doesn't even know. He says, you're double dipping when you give SNAP benefits at farmers markets. No, you're not. He doesn't understand the issue. She is there. You're supposed to represent people. You might not agree with it, but you should be able to tell people, oh, by the way, the vaccines are free. And she doesn't even know that. She's an incompetent representative. She doesn't know what she's talking about. And her argument is, well, I deleted that tweet, so I never saw it. No. She keeps getting elected because, once again, the Republican Party has devoid themselves down to people they feel own the libs. Not that they're getting any representation. And they will tolerate someone who clearly hates most of the people she represents. Most of the people that voted for her. She doesn't like you. She's called you moochers and grifters. And why aren't you getting back to slave wages? Why aren't you going back and working, you know, for minimum wage? That's who she is. She doesn't care about her people. And yet they keep electing her. Why? Because the only thing that matters is owning the libs. And this is why when I go back to Ingebrigtsen, I say, do not cave with these people. If they want to put a gun to their head, well, let them. Because if you do cave to them, if you do that, I'm going to be better than them. Shut up. Don't. No, don't. You are better than them because you're not threatening the state with your petty arguments. What I want you to do is just basically step back and say, well, good luck with that. We're not going to do it. So this is on you. You're the ones that are shutting down the state. Have a nice day. And you see, it's the only way these people flinch is when all of a sudden that local park is closed. And in the case of Ingebrigtsen, not necessarily with France, and although this editorial is exceptional, I did like that editorial quite a bit. But when you look at this in regards to the, you know, Ingebrigtsen, if you go on out there and you cave on clean cars, his constituents are going to say, look at that tough guy negotiation. Like he basically played a game of chicken and they flinched. They played a game of chicken and they flinched. So the only way you win is basically to let them shut down the state. And when Republicans in their district are like, hey, why is the park closed? I own the local restaurant. We're supposed to be busy tonight. No one's at the park. Why is the park closed down? Well, because Bill Ingebrigtsen said the park is not going to open unless they pass clean cars, and the Democrats didn't cave on clean cars. Well, I don't care about clean cars. I need the park open. I need customers to come on in here. This is summer. This is my busy time. I need this money. And I guarantee you that business owner will call up Bill Ingebrigtsen. Bill, I see what you did. You tried to call or bluff. It didn't work. Get back. You're going to get that bill passed. I don't care. And then all of a sudden, the next town that has a park might not be in Bill Ingebrigtsen's district. They're calling Ingebrigtsen saying, dude, I don't know what you're doing, but reopen the parks. It's over. You're not going to kill our business. Not after the pandemic. And like I said, by the end of the day, on July 1st, so many Republicans will be calling saying, you're doing what now? No, you're done. You lost. Go. You're done. You're going. So that's the important part. And so that's the key. Do not cave on this. Do not cave on this. That is it right there. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We got him. Senator John Marty, kind enough to join us there. Senator, thank you very much. I know you're very busy. You're taking time on the floor.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Have you ever, in your mind, at the beginning of a special session, decided, you know what I'm going to do? Fly to Alaska. Have you ever decided you're going to do that?
No, I confess I haven't. It would be one thing. The thing that's ironic about it is that he was the guy who was threatening to, well, if we can't have our way on blocking clean cars, we can't have our way on weakening environmental standards, and we'll shut down the parks, we'll shut down st- state parks and everything that everybody else needs for recreation. And not everybody has the money to fly up to Alaska for vacation. And I won't begrudge him that, but I just wish he wasn't in the position of threatening to shut down state government if he didn't get his way on every detail.
And Senator, by all means, I'm glad you say that, but I'm going to make the point. I'll make the point. First of all, he's the one that himself is trying to shut down this environmental bill in all the state parks. And on top of that, and this is one of the things that does make me upset, is that, say, you know, Susan Kent, Senator Kent, went to a family wedding on the first day of special session that was planned 3 years ago. The Republicans would be going ballistic about how are you not taking this seriously? The belligerence of just to do this on the first day. Is he supposed to be back before July 1st, or is he basically gone for the rest of the month?
I'm not sure what his plans are. I had only heard rumors that he was up there, but I don't know. I was just thinking it was ironic, given the fact that he had been the one threatening to shut down our state parks and all the DNR stuff and all the state government, frankly. To me, this is a critical time. I canceled some family plans because of the special session, and I understand if people have other things, but when you're threatening to shut down things for everybody else, the whole state, I think we have more of an obligation then to try and set aside our own plans to try and fix things.
Senator John Marty, Senate District 66, kind enough to join us right now. Senator, how much of a responsibility does the DFL have to save these Republicans from themselves? They pass these, they push these agenda items, they push this idea that, oh, well, I'll just shut down the state because this is their negotiating ploy. And it's not just this, it's the SNAP benefits at farmers markets, the Minnesota Historical Society. We can run through the list. There's these things that they try to push on these people. And the reality is you want to shut down the state. I mean, is the DFL have a responsibility to go on out there and say sacrifice clean cars just to stop them from hurting the state?
Well, I'm glad that the governor and others have said we're not going to sacrifice those things. We're not going to take these hits. Now the latest, I just hope that, you know, they're getting criticized for the market bucks, the farmers market help for people who are hungry. And in that kind of thing, they want to trade it for everything else. So for some bad policies on the environment and so on, they'll trade anything. And the thing that hurt me most was hearing that they were describing the market bucks thing as, quote, double dipping. You know, we don't want people to get double dipping. These are seniors who are hungry, trying to get food. And, you know, they get a chance to go to a farmer's market and get $10. And, oh, that's too much. And they already get food stamps. I keep thinking, they get food stamps. They have soup kitchens. They have their own income, none of which are adequate to put food on the table. It's not like people are going out of their way and they're just begging for $10 coupons so they can get some fresh produce because they're greedy people. These are people who just want to eat. And that's the whole thing. That's what's so weird, that it's being characterized as if it's double dipping or something, when all these are people who are hungry and trying to put food on the table for their families. And this is the market bucks one is one that's so, it not only helps the family, it also helps these small farmers who sell produce at farmers markets. It's for their advantage too. And so to me, it's a win-win program for people, and yet we have to be fighting hard to keep it from getting eliminated.
And it should be mentioned, I want to make sure we're aboard. This is Senator Tory Westrum is the one that's trying to kill this program. And his comments about the double dipping show that he just doesn't even understand how the program works, which makes you ask the question, why are you in charge of deciding what does this program if you have no idea what it does? That's a fantastic program. We talked extensively about that yesterday as well. You know, this is what, you know, Senator, when you talk about this, this is the frustrating element. There are places we had Representative Jamie Becker Finn talking about the judiciary bill, and there was compromise. The budget bill yesterday seems like they're getting that hammered out. The eviction idea, they're working on a solution. Right. There are things there, but you have these absolutists that come in and that, you know, I know that most of these bills are going to get passed, but I mean, can you stop these people? Do you feel that the House Democrats,
that's
the governor?
That's the frustration.
Yeah. Do you think that they'll be able to pull it back?
That's the frustration. You hope you want to, you realize you can't get everything you want, but But, I mean, this is the whole thing, the concept of stopping the clean car stuff. It's not like we don't have a crisis. It's not like we don't have a crisis with climate, a crisis in terms of environmental things. And yet, oh, well, we don't want to do that. That might make it awkward for people and so on. No, the auto dealers don't want it. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to do everything in our power to block it from happening. No, I mean, this is not unreasonable stuff. The clean car standards or something. I carried bills on that 10, 15 years ago, and we're long overdue for making it happen. And the governor has finally stepped up and gone through the administrative process, doing it all properly. And they're saying, well, if you want that, then we might shut down state government, state parks and everything. And that, to me, is sad. And so it's the House Democrats have been doing the best they can, but it's hard negotiating with people who are willing to, who want to do some things that we think are extremely harmful to the public, to the environment, to school kids, to other things. Mm-hmm. But we've gotta keep fighting it. And that's why when you draw attention to things like the market box thing, it puts pressure on them to have to give a little more, and so maybe we can win some of those. But it shouldn't be a fight. It should be everybody saying, this makes sense. Let's just do it.
I think one of the funny things about the market bucks thing from yesterday is when Mary Kiffmeyer becomes the voice of moderation, holy cow. So when you get there. One of the things, when you talk about the process here, I know that the Senate Republicans, they've treated the Senate Democrats horribly. They basically have said, you know, sit down, shut up. We don't want to hear from you at all. And that's got to be very frustrating for you when you're trying to do stuff and trying to make a difference because you've been elected to do that.
Right. It happens so many times. I mean, when I think of how many bills I've had heard in the last 3-4 years, it's pretty close to zero would be, if you round it, it would be to zero. I've had this catalytic converter theft prevention thing, and they put a little tiny provision in the Commerce Bill, but it doesn't really do a whole lot. But we could fix it. I mean, catalytic converters. I heard from Rochester TV station a couple weeks ago who was telling me that their school bus company had 20 buses hit for catalytic converter theft. You're hearing it from Moorhead police. You're hearing it from all over the place. In the Twin Cities, it's worse than ever. And, well, I can't get anyone to tell me that they oppose it, but they just don't want to talk about it. And that's, yeah, when I argue that everybody at the legislature can contribute some ideas and something, but they just kind of, even though we're down by like 1 or 2 votes in the Senate, it's kind of like, well, we don't need you here. You used to be a chair. I mean, I used to be a committee chair. Now I feel like I'm being treated like a chair, meaning a piece of furniture. No, nope, your ideas aren't worth anything. Your ideas don't matter. That's not the way you treat other people. I like the idea that we should listen to people, both parties and so on. But no, it's frustrating because you're put in a position where they act as if you don't matter.
Next year will be interesting. Also, when redistricting happens, that's going to be very fun. Can't wait to watch their face when they see where the new districts are. The last thing I'm just going to ask you really quick here is the you guys play Ron Latz, Susan Kent, yourself. You guys, I love how you play soccer goalie because let's face it, we've had in the past double crosses and these final bills come on out and things somehow mysteriously disappear from them. Sometimes things get added to them. The Senate does a great job. I'm presuming you guys are gearing yourself up to when those final bills get there, your crews can take a look through them and make sure that they're on the up and up and that people have not adulterated them. Is that correct?
Right. We're trying to, again, in Finance Committee, which is meeting in a little while. I mean, we get bills coming out that nobody's seen except the chairs and leadership. And so we don't have any access to them. And then they are going to be heard an hour or so later. So we're doing everything we can. And our staff are working like fanatics trying to get through the bills and summarize and make sure that there are no surprises. It shouldn't be there.
Senator, if you do have your favorite Minnesota, not Alaska, Minnesota lake, what's your favorite Minnesota lake that you like to go to, my friend?
Oh, I think Lake Superior is my favorite. Maybe it's because of the size.
It's a beaut.
I love it. We got 15,000 lakes over 10 acres. I kind of like everyone I've been to, I've kind of liked.
That's beautiful. Well, I'm with you. I'm vacationing in Minnesota when my job is done, when I go on vacation, not when special session starts.
When you're ready to go. Yes. And I think, you know, I think you're right. We have an obligation to get the public business done first, and I hope we can do that in the next day or two, next few days. Won't be this next day or two, but it's got to be more than the day before the end of the month. We got to, every day we get closer to shutdown, the more cost and the more headache and the more everything it is, not just for the state employees, but all the people they serve and all the state, every aspect of state lives that state government touches. So we've got to fix it, and I hope we can do it quickly.
I'm glad you're there. I'm glad you're taken care of. I'm glad you're not in Alaska, and I'm glad you're taking this seriously. Thank you very much. Senator John Marty, Senate Thank District you. 66, all my best in negotiations. Thanks for being there, my friend.
Take care.
Take care. Senator John Marty, kind enough to join us. We'll take a quick break, get back, wrap up the first hour when we're done. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. Do not save these people from themselves. You know, and once again, there are a lot of, and I know on the DFL, we got a lot of the bleeding heart liberals. We've got to be better. No, don't. They just don't want you to have the choice on clean cars. Why? Because people want clean cars. Duh. So this is all that is. And Westrom, oh gosh, like I said, when Mary Kiffmeyer becomes the voice of moderation, how broken are you, dude? Dude, you are broken. Thank you very much to Senator John Marty for taking the time to join us today. We'll spotlight that interview. Hour two coming in. A lot of developments on some of the crimes going on in Minneapolis. Sven Sundgaard, weather update. We got talking about this heat and where this is going to go. And your calls as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Maybe. I have no idea. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. This is kind of fun because it's because of the seat of your pants radio, because we whenever we get into special sessions, end of sessions, we get politicians, we're kind of at the mercy of their schedule. The fact Senator John Marty took time. You know, this is the crime. We've got great DFL senators, and we've got a bunch of just absolute jackassian Republicans who basically – and it's always funny. If the Democrats take over, which they likely will after redistricting, that will be a hoot. These same Republicans were like, you remember how we treated you for the last 5-6 years? Well, you'd better be nice to us now. Oh, the heck with you. See, this is why I know I can't be a senator or rep, because I would just, I'm going to treat you the exact way you treated me. And I'm going to derail the tax bill unless you get police reform in there. And I'm now going to go to Alaska, you know. Good times. Anywho, that's why I don't do that. 952-946-6205. Hey, so Patrick, when you're dumping your trash out in the middle of the woods, where do you do it at?
Right at the base of the tree.
It helps. It stabilizes. If winds come in, it doesn't knock it down. Good thinking. That's environmentally safe. No, actually, no. Some folks apparently believe Forest Road 117 North in Hoyt Lakes is a free dumping ground for their trash. This is actually pretty staggering. Employees at the Laurentian District of the Superior National Forest spent May 27th cleaning up along Forest Road 117, collected a staggering total of 2.28 tons of garbage that people had just been going out there and throwing on a three-mile stretch of Forest Road 117. They gathered 5 pickup truck boxes full, plus 2 dump trailers, including 7 TVs. Are any of those good? Are they selling those? No, I'm sorry. 7 TVs, 12 tires, vacuums, furniture, box springs, beer and pop cans, toys, and even an antique pickup truck cylinder. That seemed like that'd be somewhat valuable, actually. While the labor was free, volunteer time from the employees, thank you very much. It cost the Forest Service $181 to get rid of the junk. Forest Service officials note it appears that multiple people are dumping trash over an extended period along the road instead of taking it to landfill or recycling center. You think? It never ceases to amaze me By the way, I should say, officials ask that if you see someone illegally dumping, do not approach the violator. Leave the area. Contact your local Forest Service with a time, date, location. They'll come pick it up. And if you get the license plate, I don't think that that's the worst thing in the world to go jot that down. And so you can turn that person in. But it's always funny because when you talk about stuff like you're regulating trash and stuff like that. You get people who get so furious, like, it's a nanny state. But then you guys get, you do this. And then people go up in there and do this. And so, yeah, we have to, because there are people that they go out in the beautiful forest in northern Minnesota. Have you been up by Hoyt Lakes? You cover baseball and some sports up there, right?
I don't think I've covered sports, but I've been up near Hoyt Lakes.
Gorgeous area. Gosh, is that pretty? That whole area. Who goes out there and says, yeah, I'm going to throw an antique car cylinder? Clean up the mess. Don't do that. But that's why we have to have rules. This is why. This. 2 tons of trash on one forest road. How much do you think else is out there?
Yeah, not just on that road, all over the place.
Whatever happened to the guy that just had all the trash in his yard? You remember, you might be too young for this. When I was a kid, we'd go drive around, and there'd be some guy's yard. There'd be like 16 cars. There'd be all sorts of trash, kind of the Sanford and Son thing. Some guy that just, they collected trash and all this stuff, and people would come by and buy stuff and go look through, see if they had anything in there. But you don't do it. You used to have that. Maybe that's what we need. We need to have some places where if people just want to Texas it, have their big yard full of trash, that we allow them to do it, because, at least then it's confined there as opposed to going out into the pristine wilderness and chucking it out there, Can you imagine how much of that stuff leaked into the water supply, into the ground? Especially that motor. How much oil and stuff went in there? 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I want to get into first of all, let me go to the latest on the investigation into the shooting of Winston Boogie Smith Jr. Several pieces of gun evidence were recovered in and around the vehicle of Winston Boogie Smith Jr. was sitting in when he was fatally shot by members of the federal task force early this month, according to newly filed court documents. Now, before I read any further, I am going to save anyone the time. Yeah, I'm skeptical, too. I'm skeptical, too. This entire U.S. Marshal task force seems to have been a joke. It doesn't make any sense why. You were an arrest looking for a target at this point. There seems to be conflicting evidence about what exactly did happen. There's no body cam footage. There's no video footage anywhere of what exactly happened. And we brought up with a few weeks ago that the people that are investigating this crime used to be subordinates for the woman who is the U.S. Marshal right now. So the ability to look like you're impartial is gone. And frankly, I don't know what you can say. I have zero doubt there's probably tons of video evidence of them opening the car and doing the search, and everyone had cameras on. But what was the car doing between the time of the shooting and the time the search started? We don't know. And we can't trust you because you guys keep screwing this stuff up. So as I read this story, yep, I'm just as skeptical as everyone else. I would like to believe things are as being reported, but I can't say that, because we'll just start with the fact that in the city of Minneapolis, this knucklehead U.S. Marshal decided cameras weren't a good idea after everything that's happened in this city. Dumb, dumb, dumb. And the conflict of interest between the BCA and the Marshal's office, that should have negated some of this investigation right from the get-go. Now, as I've said that, search warrant affidavits filed earlier this week in Hennepin County District Court show 14 cartridge casings from police firearms were found outside the car. Okay, let's stop right there. 14? 14. Two deputies fired 14 rounds? I hesitant to bring in my military experience. I am a veteran of the U.S. Army. I am. I have had to go to firing ranges, and there are techniques you learn when you're in the military on firing weapon. The first thing you learn is, guess what? That bullet's going to do a lot of damage. You don't need to be hitting people with 16, 17 bullets like it's a Bruce Willis film to take them down. It's not Die Hard. It's not a RoboCop. It's not a Terminator robot. It's a human being. We talked about this with the guy that shot the kids up in Little Falls, where he was talking about how many rounds he had to put into people. It's like, you shoot one person with one round, they're going down. And you're going to be lucky if they don't die of shock from getting hit, because a bullet does an insane amount of damage. 14. That's panicked firing. That's panicked firing, period. Okay? 14 cartridge casings from police firearms were found outside the car. 6 cartridge casings from another gun were found inside the vehicle. A Smith & Wesson M&P 380 pistol was also recovered from the driver's side of the vehicle, one affidavit said. 6 casings matching the pistol were found inside the vehicle, 2 from the driver's seat, 1 from the floor nearby, 2 from the center console, and 1 from the passenger area. So they're saying 6 rounds, they're saying 6 casings were fired there. You can't say that. The bullets have been fired. The casings are there. When they got fired, we don't know. Attorneys for the woman who was in the car with Winston said he was killed when he was killed on June 3rd, said last week that she never saw him with a weapon. Once again, she never saw a gun on Winston Smith, and she never saw a gun inside the vehicle at any time. Attorney Racy Rodney said last week, R-O-D-N-E, if I mispronounced it, Rodney, I do apologize. The Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the BCA, said that Smith fired a weapon from inside the car, Smith 32, and the woman had left Stella's Fish Cafe in Uptown when members of the U.S. Marshal Service Fugitive Task Force approached him in a parked car on the 5th floor of the parking garage across from the street from the 1400 block of West Lake. Authorities say that Smith was wanted on a warrant for being a felon in possession of a gun. The events that followed, which were not captured on video because the officers were not using body cameras or dash cameras, remain murky. That is the understatement of the year. The BCA, which is investigating the shooting, has not said who fired first, but said Smith had a gun from inside the vehicle. Well, if 2 men are approaching him and they fire on him first, that... According to the preliminary investigation, at one point, the Hennepin County Sheriff's Deputy and Ramsey County Sheriff's Deputy serving on the task force to charge their weapon striking the man, the BCA said evidence of the scene indicates the man fired his weapon from inside the vehicle. The new court documents were equally vague, stating at some point during the interaction, shots were fired. A handgun and, okay. And once again, we are looking for clarity. We are looking for answers. We're looking for definitives. And at some point, the gun's going to happen. What the heck happened? I don't know. These guys just aren't, they're not taking it seriously. And I mean, they're not taking it seriously. And they'll say, yes, we are. No, you're not. You're not. Look at your actions here. Come on. Cameras should be on everyone, all times. Period. It should be an immediate fireable offense if a police officer turns off their body camera during their shift, unless they're going to the bathroom or something like that. It should be an immediate fireable offense. Car cameras should always be on. For goodness sakes, you can record hours on an iPhone. If you've got a camera that's attached to a battery in a car, you can tape hours of it. I can't trust because the U.S. Marshal, the conflict of interest between the BCA and the Marshal Office, you can't trust the investigation. Now we have this investigation. Aha! Let's be vague. None of this makes, you know, this is just garbage. A handgun and spent cartridge cases were found inside the driver's area. The BCA said soon after the incident, search warrant affidavits didn't provide any clarification about the circumstances. Still don't even know what the hell were you even doing there? This is just, once again, another example of just a failure to understand where Minneapolis is right now. I have to bring up this other crime, though, because this has been breaking this afternoon, and there seems to be some updates here. I want to make sure that we cover it. Yeah, this is a little bit disturbing, to say the least. Body parts were found Thursday morning along a road near the Mississippi River in Minneapolis. Police say they're treating the discovery as a homicide. You think? You found body parts. Now, I'm kind of looking at my hands, trying to think, what body part would you have there that you wouldn't say to yourself, well, this looks suspicious. I wonder if it's a homicide. Would my ear being there? Would you just, did somebody lose an ear? Is this what's going on? I would say if you found an ear on the ground, homicide is generally going to, I think you can go with that. Run. Are you right? Hey, look, it's a hand. Are you sure it was a homicide, though? Or did someone just misplace their hand? No. A passerby told 911 the report of parts shortly before 9:30 a.m. in 300 block of Northeast Main Street, not far from the Mississippi River. We're treating this as a homicide, as the loss of these parts would likely not be survivable. He said the appearance of parts likely from a white adult indicates that the death would be relatively recent. He said the gender of the parts are unknown. Homicide and crime lab investigators are collecting evidence at the scene. Investigators are going through previous calls to police, missing person reports of the like. I will add from Fox 9, this is from Karen Scullin over at Fox 9. It now appears there are multiple locations of body parts found in Northeast Minneapolis. More to come. So far, three locations of human body parts, just a few parts here and there. In one location, it was just one that I could see. You could see? Yeah.
Not to get too deep into this, if we establish this is the parts from just one person, or could this be multiple parts from many people?
I don't think it's many, but you're right. We don't really know if it's one or multiple. Yikes. Obviously, this is a developing story. And I'm sure we'll have... I can't say anything, because anything I say at this point is going to come across as inappropriate. They need... For goodness sakes. We'll read up on this. I presume we'll have more on this tomorrow. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. The latest in the why aren't people coming to work at a restaurant argument. Staffing issues continue for restaurants that are slowly climbing out of the pandemic-sized crater. The latest example is Lord Fletcher's in the West Metro canceling its popular Sunday brunch. Am I outraged? Am I? I've had it. It's good. It's nice. But, you know, it's not one of those make-or-break things for me. I'm going to say it. I feel sorry for you. It was announced in an announcement posted to social media. Lord Fletcher's Old Lake Lodge, nestled on the shore of Lake Minnetonka in Spring Park, announced the nice way to do the advertising for them. BringMeTheNews.com announced that its Sunday brunch on Father's Day will be its last. The popular lakeside restaurant cites a lack of staffing necessary to provide you with the highest quality of service. Eater profiled the struggles of fully staffed restaurants in May, noting that many workers still fear their safety despite vaccinations being on the rise, in addition to fewer customers resulting in fewer tips, making the risk of returning to work less worthwhile. Even with the vaccinations on the rise, plenty of people remain scared to go back to grueling restaurant jobs. A February study showed from the research at the University of California, San Francisco, found line cooks had the highest mortality rate during the height of the pandemic in the U.S. They had reached out specifically to Lord Fletcher's. Can I bring one thing into point, though? I mean, if you don't know where Lord Fletcher's is, it's out in Lake Minnetonka. You know, generally, you need to have a base of workforce that a job like that would appeal to. I'm not saying there aren't some lower income areas on the lake in the Lake Minnetonka area. Not anywhere on the lake. Not generally anywhere a few blocks from the lake. And this is a Sunday morning. You're saying, I mean, is there public transportation that runs out there from the city that people can get out to a job? Because if you're not paying a good wage, But you're expecting a person who's getting paid a fairly low wage to drive themselves out, 10, 15, 20 miles out to your restaurant in the far western metro and work out there. I mean, you're asking already a pretty big give on that level. So I don't know. Is there public transportation? Some of the buses do run around the far west metro. I'm not sure if they do for here. But is your base enough of a draw? Do you have enough of a base draw to staff yourself considering the location you're in? You're not in a town like New Hope or Robbinsdale or Richfield or Hopkins or Minneapolis where you have a variety of income levels where you can draw in a staff from. I've got to believe out on Lake Minnetonka that it's a fairly more difficult process when most of the neighbors and most of the people that are around you have kids that they would never even allow to have a job in the first place unless it was working for daddy's company. I'm just making the point. And I'm not saying, once again, there are lower income areas everywhere and there's hunger and need everywhere, but clearly there's going to be a lot less of the working population out there. So I don't know if this is necessarily the case. Of course, they go on to make an argument that giving the extended unemployment benefits is somehow not in the specific case of Lord Fletcher's, but they talk to some national people that say that the unemployment benefits are hurting too many people. The problem here is this. The unemployment rate went down slightly to 4% in Minnesota last month, according to the latest figures from the State Department of Employment and Economic Development. Having added 14,800 private sector jobs, the state in May recorded its fifth straight month of job gains. So people in Minnesota are not just sitting there taking the unemployment. No, they're going back to work. We are actually seeing our unemployment numbers drop. So the entire narrative that the unemployment benefits are somehow stifling employment don't make any sense. The state's labor force participation rate also increased for the first time in 3 months, and it's up 0.2% point to 67.9%. That suggests more Minnesotans are either returning to work or actively searching for it, in contrast with the recent dips in the state unemployment rate, which were attributed to residents leaving the workforce or the sum of employed people. The sum of employed and unemployed persons altogether. In a virtual news conference on Thursday, June 17th, Deed Commissioner Steve Groh said May's decrease was for the right reasons. Minnesotans are getting back to work. So what these jobs numbers point out is the narrative that the Republicans have put out, primarily the four atrocious Minnesota U.S. House Republicans, Bag of Soup, Hagedorn, Fishbach, Emmer, and Stubber, Pete Stubber, up Minnesota 8. Those guys have all said, get rid of all the unemployment benefits. Make people get back to work. Well, people are already getting back to work. And I'm sorry, if your entire argument is we need to go hurt everyone in the state of Minnesota by giving them less unemployment as this country is starting to get back on its feet, just so you guys can go get to some high-end Sunday buffet out in a pristine, fairly upper-class neighborhood so that you can go out there and enjoy yourself and enjoy the feasting that's going to happen here. I mean, you're getting people back to work. I would make an argument in the case of Lloyd Fletcher's, and once again, I've been there. It's a good meal. It's a lot of people on boats. The question is, do you have the base draw for the staffing out there in that area? And specifically, and this is kind of, like I said, a secondary issue, the transportation element of it, because frankly, people that work these jobs need to have public transportation to get from where they live to where that job is. And if you've ever been out to Lord Fletcher's, it is not easy necessarily to get to. And I'm not saying there isn't a bus that runs out there, but if it's one of those that the bus shows up at 6:40 in the morning, your shift starts at 9, that's not convenient. If you live in the city of Minneapolis and they're saying, well, why won't you drive on out here and spend the money for gas? I filled up my gas tank today. Thanks, gas industry, for not having safety protocols on the software for your computers. Thank God the Russians were able to take advantage of that. But needless to say, if I don't have the money for a car, if I don't have the money for gas, how am I supposed to get out to the job? And once again, I know there are lower income areas out there that most communities do try to find a way to have lower income options available for people. But is your base draw? I mean, I don't know how many people you would need for a Sunday buffet. I'm going to presume quite a few. Do you have enough people within, say, a 3 mile, 4 mile radius to get those people hired? Because frankly, I think the day and age of those jobs being what people settle for are kind of over. And so there's other issues there. But this idea that, the unemployment benefits are stopping our unemployment, our own unemployment numbers in the state of Minnesota say no, that the extended unemployment benefits are not impacting unemployment. That's actually our unemployment numbers are getting better even with that money, which is a good sign. Minnesota's coming back. The U.S. is coming back. Let's pay people some good wages. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. One quick Lynn thing I do want to clarify. It does sound like that, once again, Bring Me the News did try to get in touch with Lord Fletcher's about specifics. I'm going to presume about pay and salary, what was being offered. That was not part of this story. If that does get updated, we'll update that story as well. When we do return, weather time, Sven Sundgaard, bringmethenews.com. We'll talk about the weather, the impact for the rest of the summer with this heat. We'll get to that as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. We have had the pleasure of welcoming Sven Sundgaard on to talk about the weather the last few weeks. Of course, bringmethenews.com, YouTube, great channel there. Plus, he's got something else we're going to talk about here in just a second. Hey, Sven, how are you doing today?
You know, I'm super. How are you?
I'm doing very well. You are one of the highest achievers I know. You also, I do want to make sure I mention, well, you are. My gosh, how many jobs you got, man? PremierLiving.com. I know you do weathers and you work with them a little bit as well. I want to make sure we mention all the stuff you're involved with because you got a lot of fans. Why don't you tell us really quick, what is PremierLiving.com?
Well, I mean, so one of the things I did over the winter was get my real estate license. My boyfriend has been a realtor for several years and his business partner, and it just was kind of a no-brainer to join the team. And so Premier Living is our team. So yeah, I mean, if you want a forecast and you're thinking of buying or selling a home, you know, or if you want to hire me as a part-time earth science middle school teacher, you know, there's all those options available. So yeah, premierliving.com. And then under Premier Living, there's a weather tab. And it's just, I've kind of built that out on that website because it's just sort of a go-to all-in-one, you know, because I do have the YouTube channel, but I also, this allows me to kind of basically blog and post articles. So like I, been updating an article on the heat waves, all the stats that I've talked about here and everywhere, all in one place. Unfortunately, the ongoing drought is another place where I'm updating information there, and any other weather events. And then I'm doing a daily in the evening synopsis, sort of a forecast discussion, basically like my weather video, but in text, and allows me to get a little more nerdy and into the stats, and also while explaining our forecast for the days ahead. In depth there. And then I'm putting the forecast for the week ahead, the 6 day there, specifically updating it twice a day. And all my YouTube videos are posted there. So you can kind of go to all in one place that way and get all the information there. And any other updates as far as me and weather is concerned.
I will post a link, the link to everything. I want people to go check that out. It, of course, here you are. You can do teaching, you do weather, you do real estate. I got one job. I'm marginal at best. Thanks for that. but I mean, since you brought up, you know, kind of the weightier things, and you are very smart with weather, I want to actually talk to you about something. Over the last few weeks, we've talked about a few different things that I'm going to bring back together. You have talked about this heat. This June heat is remarkable, how it's not really ever happened before. These 90s are just extraordinary. You've also in the past, though, talked about how the average temperatures when we're getting later in the summer have actually started to cool a little bit. But when I looked at your latest weather, the last weather as well, there seems to be a different thing that's going on here. This building heat that not only is overriding a large swath of the United States this June, but I'm starting to get concerned of what this is going to signify for July and August. Are we going to, at least in Minnesota, see where we have seen those average temperatures drop? Or is this a harbinger of a very dangerous thing coming down the line?
Yeah, so this is complicated stuff. And I think I'm going to do a whole video slash I'm thinking of doing like a weekly sort of just climate and weather discussion breakdown. It's not just the forecast that talked about, okay, what's happened? What does it mean? You know, and take people's questions. So look for that in the works, too. That would be announced on that page we just talked about as well. And, of course, I put it on social media. But so, yeah, we've talked about – so the average number of 90-degree days in the Twin Cities has actually been decreasing. Not by much. We're talking one or two. So we average about a dozen days of 90-plus, which we've almost achieved already in this month of June this year. So I think it's safe to say, unless it was a bizarre rest of the summer, we're going to be above normal as far as that goes. So that's an interesting little piece of climate change, which says – we're maybe not reaching these extreme heats, heat margins regularly because we're seeing more debris of cloud cover from thunderstorms. Because we know we've talked about we're getting wetter, and not just wetter in terms of more days with rain and like a steadier increase in rain, but the an increase in these extreme precipitation events, which is driving up our annual or monthly totals. So those extreme thunderstorm events. And of course, we know that this year we've been in a drier pattern. So we're just not getting those extreme downpours and flooding events, which is good, but where's the happy medium, right? This is too dry. And so what we're actually seeing, the highest temperature in June, so I hope everyone can bear with me. This is why this is complicated. The maximum temperature we reach in June has actually increased over time.
Okay.
And average temperatures are actually increasing. So I have to correct you a little bit there. Our summer temperatures are still increasing. June, July, August is warmer today than it was 30, 50, 100 years ago. But we're seeing fewer of those extremes.
Okay, gotcha.
And that's, yeah, and so that's, again, probably just because we're getting more days with thunderstorms, these extreme flooding events, which typically, you know, leave us in these half cloudy days, but it keeps our temperatures a little cooler. Today is kind of almost an example of that. We didn't get much rain, but today and then last Friday, where we almost didn't hit 90, and today we're still waiting 2 days in a row now where we've hit 89. But this cloud debris does keep the temperatures down. Today, if it had been sunny, probably would have been 95, 96, 97 degrees. It would have been much hotter. And then with the humidity, you can imagine how much more uncomfortable it would have been. So, yeah, I need to preface that we're having fewer extremes, 90 plus, in the summer. And it is only slight, but the average temperatures are actually increasing. And the warmest temperature that we achieve in June is steadily increasing. It used to be, you go back a century ago, the warmest temperature on average in June was about 90, and even 90. Now the warmest temperature we reach in June is about 94. So that is an increase. And what is disturbing about the heat this year, we know we talked about how early it is here, the longest it's ever been this hot this early. If it were just us, you could say, oh, well, it's a weather pattern thing.
Yeah.
But it's not just us. Salt Lake City hit an all-time record high. Wyoming, places in Arizona have. Dead Horse, Alaska, on the Arctic Ocean, had its first earliest ever 80-degree reading. So the heat is, there's a lot more heat early in the season. And what that does mean, and I talked about this, so I'm calling it for now anyways, I kind of like it, my sort of daily evening blog post, What in the Weather? !!! Where I just sort of break things down. And I talked about somebody is going to have a very hot summer, or many places, because there's just this much heat in the system. There's nowhere for it to go. There's no mechanism. You know, if you have a hot September, things can cool off. You're heading into October. The Arctic is getting dark. Things start to cool off. But we're in June. We haven't even reached the summer solstice yet. The sun is only getting stronger slightly for North America and the Northern Hemisphere. So things are only going to heat up more, and there's nowhere for cool air to come from. The Arctic is seeing 24 hours of daylight right now. The ice is melting. So that heat bubble is only going to grow. Now, will it be pointed at us on and off all summer like we've seen in June? Maybe, maybe not. Chances are it probably will be. That's why you see all the official forecasts, and I agree with this, for a warm summer. The nice thing about being in Minnesota is we do get occasional breaks, even in a hot summer, like we're going to see early next week. But I think the West is just going to be scorched. We're already seeing a lot of fires. I talked about this yesterday, too. Today there's enough clouds, but this morning if you're out and if you looked at the sunset, it's a beautiful sunset,
yeah.
But smoke is already making its way in from fires primarily coming from Wyoming and Montana right now, but you probably see on social media there's a lot of big fires in Arizona, Colorado, and this is a little early for that fire season to be starting, and of course something we've talked about over the last few years, fire seasons are getting longer, more severe, more acres burned, and the Southwest is, and you know, we think our drought's bad. They're in a decade-long, what we call a mega drought. This is an ongoing drought that's not just a seasonal thing. So overall, And this is a great example this year of weather versus climate. This is a, just happens to be a dry June. Junes are getting wetter for us on average, but there's still going to be ups and downs, and this is a down year for precip.
And when you factor in, and once again, your great numbers, and if you're not watching these videos, the videos are great, you bring that up. I mean, we're in Minnesota. We're dry, but it's nothing like the West. The West is just in a nightmare scenario right now. And as you put it out with the Utah, the Salt Lake City number, it's not sustainable because there's just not enough water there already for a lot of what's been developed there. We're going to lose a lot of the natural wilderness out in the West.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I always tell this to people. You know, my boyfriend is from LA, moved here 7 years ago, and I have to tell his friends all the time, people are not supposed to live here, not this many people. The Southwest was not designed to handle tens of millions of human beings that all are sucking up water. And then to boot, trying to grow things like almonds in the Central Valley of California. There's just not enough water for it. You can't do it until we can perfect desalination and, you know, rid the Pacific Ocean of salt as a form of irrigation. It's just not a sustainable practice. And they're feet behind in water because it's over long periods of time. We could have a single or two single drought busting events would undo things here. We're only 2 inches behind, believe it or not, but the top of the soil is really dried out. I'm looking at dead grass all around me right now. I'm outside, and everywhere anybody goes, it's crispy unless you've been watering the heck out of your lawn. It's because of that heat wave. That heat wave almost single-handedly more than doubled the drought across Minnesota. It was about 22% before the heat wave of Minnesota was in drought. Now we're almost at 50% of the state.
And my wife and I went down and we're hiking down on the Bloomington Ferry Trail down the Minnesota River there. I've never seen the Minnesota River that low in June. That looks like late summer. I was shocked at how low that water is. This is something we're seeing on all the water areas in Minnesota. The water levels are going down fast, right?
Yeah, you know, because we had about an even winter as far as precipitation goes. You know, we measure the precipitation annually in terms of the liquid water equivalent with the snow, too. So if you had, on average, 10 inches of snow, that'd be, you know, about an inch of water. So winter was about normal. Spring, as we know and talked about, was kind of on and off, back and forth. It got pretty dry in May, but then we had a few cool, wet days late in the month that pushed us almost to about a normal May for precip, but then this heat wave has reversed that. So it's been on and off, but because it's been a normal or dry period, fall, we went into winter dry, that affects a lot of the lake and river levels is, you know, what happens going into winter, and then did you make up for it in winter or spring? We didn't. So the net effect, if we look at the last 10 months, is at a deficit.
We do actually have one area of this country that's being out a lot of water. That's the Gulf. You also bring up the fact that it looks like we're going to get our third named storm and probably the first one to hit the United States coast. A tropical storm, I should say, not any kind of hurricane. But we got some development down in the southern Gulf, correct?
Yeah. So the National Hurricane Center gives it a 90% chance of becoming a tropical storm. It'd be Claudette if it does. And I mean 90%. Pretty much we can say it will be. Yeah. It's just a matter of when. Yeah, it should make landfall along the Louisiana coast. And normally with tropical storms, the biggest concern is flooding rains. And you think, well, okay, whatever. Well, first of all, Louisiana, flooding rain is always, you know, your ears perk up because the coastal areas are all at or below sea level. But also, yes, it's been an extraordinary wet spring. And that's why a lot of people commented during our heat wave how it was bizarre that a lot of Texas was cooler than Minnesota, when it should be scorching there this time of year. They were just stuck under this low pressure, upper level low pressure that didn't move and meant it was cloudier and rainier. And while we're talking about the Southwest is behind by a foot in terms of precip, there's parts of Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, the whole Gulf Coast states there that are above by a foot. So any tropical system that adds, you know, easily a tropical storm or hurricane can dump 6 to 12 plus inches of rain is problematic. Wind is a concern too, because then you can have power outages in places that are hot and humid, of course. But the big concern there is going to be rain. If we were talking a hurricane, then winds become more of a concern too. But tropical storms too, we forget here living in this part of the world, tropical storms often do spawn severe weather too, because there's a lot of shear and these are clusters of thunderstorms rotating around. That's what makes up a tropical storm or hurricane. So a lot of times as a tropical system makes landfall, yeah, you do get tornadoes to spawn. So that's also a concern. But the big thing they're going to be watching is the rain.
So let's get going back to us up here. Rain showers we were supposed to have kind of fizzled. Looked like there was a few drops out there, but nothing major. We do have a bit of a hiccup coming up on Monday for a cool drop. But when's our next
rain?
Do we have anything on the horizon that says, you know what, look at this day, we're going to have some rain?
So Sunday is our most promising day I've seen really in 2 weeks of rain, really since the Memorial weekend. It looks to be more widespread and in two possible waves. But that's not a guarantee, and it's not going to be probably a drought-busting rain. We'd have to make up about 2 inches. But it is our best hope until maybe late next week. But when we're talking that far out, 10 days plus, there's very little very little confidence in terms of what will be happening. So don't depend on next Friday's potential. But Sunday is looking like it could be a decent shot. Looks like there will be some showers and thunderstorms in the morning, maybe some midday sunshine, and again, a very warm air mass overhead, so we would quickly shoot into the 80s. It'll be a little muggier, and then that could spawn more thunderstorms to develop Sunday afternoon, evening. So not the nicest day for Father's Day, but dads like their lawns too. So I think it might be a win if we get some rain. I don't think anybody would be complaining if we get a widespread half inch or so of rain, which is really desperately needed.
But then on Monday, I was looking up at the Iron Range temperatures. They're looking at 50s as highs on Monday. Then this is a little bit of an anomaly that's come out of nowhere.
Yeah. So my blog post from 2 evenings ago, I talked about how bizarre this is, that the pattern for early next week looks a lot like reminiscent of what we had for mid-April and mid-May when it was very cool, where we have these extraordinary, and that's normal in spring and fall, but not in the summer. And this is, again, what we've talked about here, this just wonky jet stream that, you know, there are several theories out there, and there's disputes, but there are some theories that say that because we're warming the Arctic so much, that the temperature difference between the Arctic mid-latitudes and the equator is not as much as what it used to be, and that weakens the jet stream. You know, wind is a result of pressure differences. Pressure is proportionate to temperature. If you decrease the difference, well, warming everybody up, but warming one part, the Arctic, faster than the others, you decrease that potential wind. And so the jet streams are becoming much more like a tangled jump rope or slinky versus the ripples that it should have normally. And so you get these blocking patterns. So we're heading into this situation where the West Coast all the way up into Alaska is going to see some extraordinary warmth. This heat from the Southwest is literally going to shoot that direction. And then a blocking ridge of warmth shooting up into Greenland. And then what that does is in between us, literally we're a drainage ditch of cool air from Hudson Bay and beyond. So that's going to bring in some bizarre air for this time of year, which, yeah, there's half the models don't get us out of the 60s. I'm still going for low 70s Monday, Tuesday right now, but do not be shocked if one of those days we don't get out of the 60s, even with sunshine. And that's the first full day of summer on Monday. So if we don't hit 70, that's extraordinary. It tells you just how cool the air that's coming in. But unlike April and May, the pattern looks to get moving again. In fact, we could be talking about temperatures like what we have now again by the middle or end of next week.
It does look like it's going to come back quickly. All right, so Sven Sundgaard, all the places, bringmethenews.com, of course, his YouTube channel, and then I'll put the link out to premierliving.com. Go check out there. Once again, a lot of great weather information there. Plus, if you're looking for a house, obviously, talk to those guys. Sven, thank you very much. I appreciate the time. Have a great weekend, my friend.
Thank you. Have a great weekend. Happy Father's Day, by the way.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate
it. And Juneteenth, everybody. It's an official holiday this year.
Indeed. Juneteenth celebrated tomorrow. Of course, the official day is on Saturday. Sven Sundgaard, kind enough to join us. We'll take a break. Come on back. Wrap up the show when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Sven Sundgaard, man. Best weather guy in town. Seriously. That question about whether the long-term impacts of the rest of the summer in regards to this June heat, he wasn't expecting that. And how amazing. Amazing. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. One thing I wanted to mention in regards to our conversation earlier about jobs and wages, Sandra made a very good point. Now, once again, you can watch the show. Why? It's a radio. But you can watch the show if you like. We got a stream going on. It's on Facebook at AM 950 Radio and, of course, at Progressive Citizen X, Matt McNeil Show. You can watch it either place. The point, she goes, I think another problem they're having in regards to these restaurants, these low-wage jobs that people are not going back to, that they're not paying enough, they're not getting respect. I mean, we talked about in the one story that the line cooks were the most, you know, the most endangered employment during the pandemic. How about that? Wow. I think another problem they may have, we're talking about employers, maybe having, and one that I've had, is when I go to an interview and a job says 10 to 20 hours a week, I generally expect that and expect them to hold their end of the deal. I have to had many instances where all of a sudden they're scheduling me for 30 to 32 hours and they're not honoring my availability and scheduling me during a conflict of other jobs I have. If they need me to work, and that, and by the way, Sandra, that is an excellent point. You want people to come work for you, then you need to respect them when they come in the door and say, well, I can work 10 to 20 hours a week, because I know that is a common problem. And in this day and age with these bad jobs, a lot of people were working three or four different jobs. So they needed to have some flexibility. And all of a sudden, it's like, how many times have you been out there? It's like, I can work Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And all of a sudden, you're scheduled for Sunday. And so, well, I can't work Sundays. Well, you better show up or you're fired. Well, then if you fire the person, or the person says, well, I'm not showing up, I guess you're firing me. Then they say, well, no one wants to work for me. Well, are you honoring the obligation you made with the employee when you hired them? That is a legit question. 952-946-6205. Quickly, the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Thursday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 142 new cases, 4 new deaths, including one person aged in their 20s from Hennepin County and one patient in their 30s from Wilkin County. The state's death toll now is 7,527. Since the start of the pandemic, of the total deaths, 54%. Basically, most of the people, the majority were in long-term care. The state reported that 310,116 people have received at least one dose of COVID vaccine, while 2,787,532 people have completed their vaccine series. Minnesota's population with at least one shot based on each group, 12 to 15 is 33%, 16 to 17, 47, 18 to 49, 56, 50 to 64, 71, 65 plus 90. Total population, we're at 54%. 50% of Minnesota's total population completed the vaccine series. They have a now public dashboard to track vaccine progress in Minnesota. Through June 16th, the number of people with COVID hospitalizations in Minnesota was 152. Of those hospitalized, 44 intensive care, 108 were receiving non-ICU treatment. Hospital admissions involving COVID patients in Minnesota dropped 223 on March 7th before rising 699 on April 14th. Since that day, the peak numbers, they dropped precipitously, falling to 440 May 17th, now under 160. 142 positivity results on Thursday were up from 15,518 completed tests. The test positivity rate over the past 7 days is 1.20, up a little bit, but not bad. World Health Organization recommends percentage positivity rate to be below 5%. So we're well below that. But still, once again, it's not over. It is not over. And I want to remind people, the lead on this story is pretty simple, is that there we've got people that are still passing away from COVID. 4 new deaths. This is not over. And it won't be over until people get vaccinated. Get vaccinated. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. I don't want you crippled for years with debt. Get vaccinated, please. Don't be a fool, all right? Native Roots Radio, they're up next. Have a great night. We are back on a Friday. Until then, see ya.